meeting to order, our first quarterly meeting, and I will ask Secretary Regent West to do a roll call.
Chair Bell.
Present.
Regent Ball. Regent Brinkley.
Present.
Regent Roddy.
Present.
Regent Dennison.
Present.
Vice Chair Milliken.
Present.
Regent Nichols.
Present.
Regent Spiller.
Present.
Regent Thomas.
Here.
Regent West here, and Regent Formco.
Present.
Okay, Mr. Chair, we have 10 regents present representing form of the board.
All right, thank you very much. And we have recently received the minutes from our fourth quarterly meeting for our review. I'll entertain a motion for approval of those. Regent Thomas.
Second.
Second, Regent West. Any discussion or corrections, deletions from those minutes? If not, all those in favor for approval, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Minutes are approved. Before we get into the committee meetings, many of you are aware, apparently our former First Lady, Harriet Downing, passed away this morning. And she was the epitome, I think, of a First Lady and maintained her connections with Western long after that role had ended. And quite a lady, a good friend to many of us, so recognize her. It seems fitting that we're meeting at Research Innovation Center with the winds of change literally blowing outside, but blowing inside the higher education world. I think innovation and research and rethinking maybe how we do business is going to remain the order of the day, so to speak. So we'd like to thank Buddy Steen, if he's in here, for hosting us here today in this unique facility that we'll have a chance to tour later on. But a lot of interesting good things going on in this facility. So, all right, with that, we'll go to Academic Affairs Committee.
Very good. Our first action item under our Academic Affairs business is the approval for academic program suspension for Strategic Sports Communication Graduate Certificate. Provost Fisher?
Yeah, thank you. This has been put forward by the faculty, the suspension, and has been approved by the program coordinator, department chair, the dean, and the provost. And of course, we will teach it out like we always do with any program that's suspended. And with that,
do we have any discussion? Then we'll entertain a motion to approve to suspend the Strategic Sport Communication Graduate Certificate with implementation in the spring of 2023. Do I have such a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Our second item of business is the approval of sabbatical leaves from faculty that are listed at page 2 of your program for today. Again, Provost.
Thank you. So sabbatical leave will be for 23-24. To be eligible for sabbatical leave, you have to have at least 6 contiguous full academic years, hold the rank of assistant professor, and have submitted an sabbatical application that's been approved by your area, and then sent to the provost office. In addition, I'd like to make one change to the people that have asked for it. Dr. Gordon Bayless has withdrawn. He is going to do it next year. His plans fell through, and he will resubmit next year. And with that. that. We have 11 sabbaticals from 3 of the 5 colleges.
Do we have any discussion? If not, I will entertain a motion for the approval of faculty sabbatical leaves for those individuals, those recommended individuals for the terms indicated. Do I have such a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. I want to go now to action item number 4. That is the approval of faculty emeritus status for Dr. Sam Evans and Dr. John Moore and Mr. Rico Tyler. Do we have any discussion in that regard?
We do. We are lucky enough to have all three of them in the room today. And we would love to give each one a chance to tell you about their career here at WKU. So we will start with Dr. Sam Evans, who is Dean of the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Fisher. My career at WKU really started in 1990. I got baptized by fire, so to speak. Within 5 months, they decided I would be the person who would direct the preparation of the portfolios for all the education programs across campus for our national accreditation. That was not an easy task by any stretch of the imagination. The quality of the faculty, the work they did make a difference for me, and it was probably my initial work relative to my career here at WKU. The piece that truly made a difference was our leadership in a program that developed the Renaissance Teacher Work Sample. 10 institutions, ultimately 11 across 9 states. It's not an easy task when you think about it. But we were very successful. It was adopted by other institutions across the United States, designed for accountability purposes in terms of teacher candidates' impact on student learning or student performance. And to my knowledge, it is still being used on campus and is making a difference. I had an opportunity to engage in a lot of things, state, national, internationally, and I would say the work that I did was possible because of the faculty. If it weren't for a good group of faculty doing exceptional work, I wouldn't have gotten there, bottom line. Also, the staff that we had in the college, staff across the university campus, were extremely helpful, and I can't forget the students. If you don't have a good group of students, you're not going anywhere. And they did make a difference. So the bottom line is, I do want to thank you as the Board of Regents. I want to thank the faculty, the staff, and the students. They did enable me to do what I did. And the late Joe Kanjemi always told me, said, Sam, leaders are not stars. Leaders produce stars. And I thought that was so true in the work that I did. So thank you very much.
Second it may person. Be worth noting Sam's wife, Mary, is here with him, and you've got to have a spouse of Maritai, too, right?
That's true.
Really, and Sam told me before the meeting he's still writing, producing some work, and so Maritai does not mean retired.
That's right.
Good.
The second person is Dr. John Moore, who was professor of teacher education.
Thank you for the honor and recognition. My 30 years at Western consisted of experiences with students and colleagues that were most enjoyable and rewarding. The highlight of my career was serving as department head of middle grades and secondary education and in leadership areas. In my academic area, I served as president of Kentucky Council for the Social Studies for 3 years, and then I went on to serve as president of National Council for the Social Studies that consists today of 23,000 social studies teachers. I recently published a book called Teaching the Struggle for Civil Rights, so you're right, I'm still writing. It just came out in May of 22nd. And this book focuses on issues in social studies and civil rights as it relates to 1977 to the present. So these are modern-day issues as it relates to civil rights throughout our nation. And the book is mainly curriculum design for middle school and high school social studies teachers. If I could be of service to the university in the future or any assistance, please let me know. Go Tops.
And the last is Mr. Rico Tyler.
Good morning. Before I say anything else, I need to mention that I'm only here because the other two members that are being voted in today were my dean and my first department head. They were my mentors that made everything else possible that I did while I was here at Western. Although I do need to say that I was actually on this campus before either of them. My first encounter with Western was in the fall of 1970 when a 10-year-old Rico was brought up here by Dr. Vabakevich, a member of the Department of Physics and Astronomy, to show me the observatory and the planetarium, the new observatory and the new planetarium. And later in 2001, when I came here full-time, that's where I worked. I was here to teach for the school, for the Department of Curriculum Instruction, and to teach for the Department of Physics and Astronomy. And from there, I got a chance to be one of the founding teachers of SkyTeach, and just love what I do. The only real worry I have is this doesn't mean that I lose my key to my office. I would really be upset with that. Because I'm not finished working yet.
Thank you for everything you've done, and thank you for being here.
With that being said, I would now entertain a motion for approval of emeritus status for these three individuals who are so prominent on our campus.
So moved.
Second. Have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Now I would like to take up action item number 3. And this is a request for the approval of University Distinguished Professor appointment for Dr. Thomas Keith Phillips, Professor of Biology, to be effective on July the 1st, 2023. Mr. Provost.
Yes. I would just like to mention a few things about an incredible career that's happened on this campus. He's highly respected internationally for both teaching and research. He teaches intro to biology, insect diversity, insect evolution, lots of other courses, as well as study abroad courses. His research focuses on insect diversity, which you will get a chance to see today, especially in Coleoptera, and for people like me, I know what that is, but most people in the world don't. But it's beetles, so all types of beetles, including spider beetles, dung beetles, cave beetles, those types. I think the real positive about his research is it's done with graduate and undergraduate students. It's about what we're about, which is to give people hands-on opportunities to learn, and that's really what he does incredibly well. In addition, he's a prolific writer. I mean, if you look at his career, it's 92 peer-reviewed publications, 78 since he came to WKU, and 40 since he became full professor, which is just amazing. And in addition to that, he's mentored 15 master's students, and he's published 249 DNA sequences in GeneBank. So he has been busy. There's no doubt about it. But I had a conversation with him the other day when we were looking at his beetle collection, which there's two nerds looking at a beetle collection as we were, and you could tell the passion, you could tell the excitement. It was amazing, and he had students with him, and they were just as excited, so it was excellent. So I would highly, highly recommend that him as the University Distinguished Professor.
I will then entertain a motion for the approval of Dr. T. Keith Phillips as Distinguished Professor effective July 1st, 2023. Go ahead, take the motion. Second? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The motion carries. It is now my pleasure to introduce to you Dr. T. Keith Phillips for an information item and a presentation. Dr. Phillips.
I first off just want to thank everybody involved in this process of me becoming a university distinguished professor. There's a lot of people that helped me obtain this honor. I truly appreciate it. I'm very grateful for it. I'd just like to make a note of thanks to my parents. My mother will be 94 this May. My wife Linda, who's always been very supportive and tolerant, I might say, as well as all the students and colleagues and friends that I've worked with over the years, that, you know, helped make my career. So, Tanya, I'm going to try to stay on script, because if I don't stay on script, I think I will take too long, and I know I've only got a short little bit to talk about. It seems to be gone, so I guess I'll have to But anyhow, insects. I mean, I just want to start out by saying I started collecting insects when I was 6 years old. It was all my father's fault. He saw me looking at bugs, and he said, "Keith, why don't you start an insect collection?" And from that point on, I really started my study of insects, and I've never lost my enthusiasm. I have to say, you know, it's really nice to do my hobby and get paid for it, so thank you very much to Western Kentucky University. Next slide here. So I think the one thing about, you know, studying insects for me is really what I'm trying to do is, enthuse, involve students in research and get them excited about insect biodiversity and truly the conservation of insects as well. I mean, there's a lot of habitats that were, you know, continually losing, and I think, you know, when you think about insect conservation, which is really what is the thrust of my research, is to try to identify habitats, unique habitats, endangered habitats that, okay, so once we know what's there, then we can conserve. And if we don't know what's there, we really can't conserve. So, I mean, that's really the goal, to try to get students and continue the legacy of students. So if you think about beetle diversity, I mean, I study, as Bud said, I study three relatively small groups of beetles, spider beetles, dung beetles, and cave beetles. Now, if you think about the number of beetle species described, over 400,000 species, they're estimated to be over a million species of beetles on Earth. I suspect that estimate is far too low, as I think I'll show you in the future. Now, as far as my field work, it's taken me to a lot of interesting places. This is the most recent trip was in the Atacama Desert. That's a small part of the western coast of South America. A couple of students there, the one in the top right is a former student, and the one in the bottom left, actually, that's in northern Chile, where we're doing work. I mean, you can see not too much vegetation, a little bit of vegetation on the top right, and that's where we can find some of our spider beetles. Caves in Kentucky, I spent a lot of time on my hands and knees crawling in caves, looking for small, little, tiny blind beetles with only our headlamps to show the way. I mean, a lot of students in these pictures. Some other field work, northern Chile, New Mexico, Richtersfeld, South Africa, Cameroon. I mean, I think, you know, my research has taken me to a lot of different places and always with students. Some other rate. Places we've been to, Guinea, West African places, Guinea, Liberia, Ghana. I have to say the Nimba Range in Guinea, southeastern Guinea, is maybe one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in the world. And as far as conservation, I mean, my work's involved in a lot of trying to identify places, trying to look at places that are highly threatened by habitat destruction, bushmeat hunting, climate change. And here's an example of, okay, a couple of groups of beetles I've worked on with students. Actually, the one on the right side was a project with an undergrad student where we described 11 new species of one genus of spider beetles in South Africa. But if you look at the distributions, we're just trying to look at where species occur and look at high species richness, and maybe those places aren't protected, and so we can go ahead and conserve them, protect them, identify them, and protect them. Now, as far as spider beetles, okay, it's a really, really diverse group of insects, I think, because, you know, a lot of shapes and structures. You can see those four species. They're not often collected. They're quite obscure. They've got a lot of bizarre lifestyles, like living with ants, bellicose ants called myrmecophily, leaf and seed miners, and a lot of species that feed on detritus. Some are stored product pests as well. These four species, they're all four new species. They represent four new genera we described. I mean, the diversity is just so poorly known. So why do they call them spider beetles? Well, when they move, they tap their antennae on the front of the ground in front of them, so it looks like a fourth pair of legs, and then the head is sort of tucked underneath the middle part of the body, and so it looks like two body regions, just like spiders. Quite cute, aren't they? Now, one of the big projects, I started in 2003 working on in West Africa, Ghana specifically, the Ghana Insect Project, and that was funded in part by National Science Foundation money. I've gotten close to $500,000 from National Science Foundation to do work in West Africa. But the Ghana and the larger region, you can see West Africa, Upper Guinean Forest. These places, this picture in Conservation International represents biodiversity hotspots, places that are highly threatened but highly species rich. And Upper Guinean Forest, it was a place poorly studied, and it was a great place. You know, it continues to be a great place to work. I mean, the project, it's ongoing. Seems it'll never end. Back to U.S. I mean, we tend to think, at least I did as a kid, you know, all the insects are known in Canada and the United States. Okay, so here's an example of a student, Robert Chambliss. I did a couple of weeks field work with him. He continued on for 3 months collecting specimens in Western North America. And so here's a species or genus that was known from three species. And so based on his collections and then, you know, phylogenetic analysis and molecular data, the hypothesis now is there's 12 species from three. This is in the Western U.S. If the fauna is this poorly known in the Western U.S., and this reflects a lot of different insects that are in the U.S. As well, if you look, this is just one of these clades that, okay, it was originally thought to be one species, it's actually eight. And then sort of all the colored patches are localities for these different species, and then the percentages are just the genetic divergence between them. A lot of these species, by the way, are morphologically distinct. Some are not. Some are just distinct molecularly, but those are what we call cryptic or hidden species, and there's a lot of them out there. Now, here's a genus from Peru that we described, Cordyolitrum, five new species. Okay, so this is in the Atacama Desert. We've surveyed about a third of the Atacama. We've got another two-thirds. It seems like every single drainage we sample has an undescribed species. Some of those drainages have been destroyed by agriculture. Species are gone, but at least there's a lot of them still there. South America, for example, too. Here's a couple of species that represent not just new species, but new genera. There's a lot of them out there. And then here's something really weird. This genus Xenocotylus I described with a former grad student, Kyle Worrell. It's got a little tiny, I'll have to show you because it's pretty hard to see, a little tiny opening on the body here. It's only found in these guano peninsulas, bird guano peninsulas, islands off the Peruvian coast mainly. And, okay, so this little opening, we figured it was used to release defensive compounds to maybe protect itself from ants or other predators. We brought some back alive, and together with Eric Conti, this chemistry professor, we used the gas chromatography mass spec machine to try to see if we could get some sort of chemical signal from these this reported gland. The data is still inconclusive. We haven't really found any sort of what looked like defensive compounds. So we're not sure what's going on, but it's, you know, it's got this little tiny opening with hairs almost like eyelashes to probably keep the dirt out. Cave beetles. Another grad student of mine, Tommy Apostolopoulos, we surveyed eastern Kentucky, Somerset, up, you know, towards Lexington. There's this species of beetle, Darlington. It's a single species. And, okay, so we collected all these samples. We did molecular work. We did a cutting-edge next-generation sequencing technique called 3RAD, where you get piles of data. So we got over 94,000 DNA bases to hypothesize the relationship to all these different populations. A good study, molecular study, may have 3,000 bases. So you can see how much data we had. And then the branch lengths represent genetic divergence. And all those different colors represent, okay, what we thought was one species is actually 11. And a lot of these cave systems, I mean, they're really showing the sort of connectivity, you know, these sort of unique cave systems that, okay, I mean, most of them aren't terribly well protected, but at least we're sort of getting an idea of how these caves, you know, separate cave systems, the diversity of each cave system, which this beetle, you know, this applies to probably a lot of cave organisms. Dung beetle evolution. This is something I worked on for quite a while ago. I still do a little bit of work on dung beetles. I'm actually trying to get away from them, but the dogma was dung beetles, it's sort of, I mean, they're a really popular group with a lot of people that study insects. But they thought that the dung beetles diverged with one clade, one lineage leading to all tunnelers, one lineage leading to all rollers. And that's the dung manipulation behavior. So I did a study, and, okay, what the accepted truth now is that rolling behavior evolved numerous times. I mean, here you can see seven times the thick black bars are where rolling behavior evolved in this, you know, family tree of dung beetles. So not just one time, piles of times. Cave beetles, you might think that, you know, the climate crisis is not really affecting cave organisms. We certainly know it's affecting life on top of the planet and in oceans and things, but here's a paper that just came out showing the effect of a cave beetle. You might think caves would be very buffered against the climate crisis, but these things are, caves are predicted to get a little warmer and dry out. And our study showed that, you know, lower humidity levels really affect the survivability of these beetles, and that's probably true of a lot of cave organisms. I have to tell you about just one last project. This was an interesting project where there was this giant dung beetle that was only known from a few specimens. Last one was seen, collected, reported in 1949. Because it was so large, they thought it was associated with elephant dung, a specialist on elephant dung. So we did a study of the mouthpart morphology, and we found that the mouthparts didn't indicate that it was sort of a fresh dung feeder. And so we thought it might still be there. So we went to Angola. And, you know, I mean, the problem was, too, I have to say, the elephants were wiped out. They either were shot for meat or driven out into Botswana and adjacent countries. But anyhow, so we went there, and lo and behold, we found the thing. It was still alive. We had to be a little bit careful because Angola is one of the more heavily mined countries, so we talked to Halo Trust, an NGO, which was in charge of demining. But it's only found in southeastern Angola. And I think, you know, when I think about the legacy of being a teacher, it's really, you know, our students. You know, we're passing on the torch and educating them and getting them enthused. But the bottom left picture is a shot of me in Costa Rica. I think Clinton took that shot. And then top, he might have taken the top right one, too. The top left is the Idea Fest from last year. And then the bottom right was from an Allegan County grade school that came to visit. I mean, there were about 120 of these small squirmy students running around. I divided them into two groups and, you know, sort of videos for one and then into the lab, a couple of labs actually with the other. And I'll end now. I've probably gone a little bit over time, but just thank you very much for your support. I really appreciate it. Any questions if you have?
Professor Phelps, first, congratulations, and thank you for investing your life in the university. And you're an exemplar for the rest of our faculty around what it's like to pursue your passion and get paid for it, as you described. And it's not a bad deal. The way in which you've both balanced teaching, field work, and sponsored research, students are the lifeblood of the academy. So will you talk about some of your students who've gone on and what they've gone on to do that you remember and where they are? Because what is great.
There's one more slide, actually, I could show you. Okay, so I've had a lot of students. A lot of them, like my postdoc, she's a faculty member in Australia. Another student of mine, a Colombian, Jesus Orozco, he's a faculty member in university near Tegucigalpa, Honduras. There's another student, one of my former Ghanaian students, he's actually in Missouri, the university, working there. So, another student, there's Kyle Worrell. Kyle. But anyway, the picture on the left actually is just, you know, some of my former, all former grad students. Karen Bell on the right, I mean Jesus, but yeah, they've gone on to do PhDs, successful careers. One became a book author. Another one works for the National Park Service. So I think, it looks good, you know, to see them going on and doing great things in their lives that help society.
I want you not to feel too bad about not figuring out what that hole's about. We still haven't figured out what the appendix is for. So. Yeah.
We may never.
I did have a question. The cave beetle, it's blind. Mm. What sort of special adaptations separate them maybe from some of the other beetles they can see?
Yeah, I mean, caves, complete darkness, so they don't need eyes. I mean, it's just, you know, why bother? You know, it sort of makes evolutionary sense just to sort of forego them, I suppose. But longer appendages, longer insect hairs we call seedy, that give them more of a feel, antennae, you know, long antennae, and they just move around. I mean, complete darkness. I mean, it works for them. They're highly successful predators, one of the top predators in caves in Kentucky. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Chairman, that concludes the academic affairs matters. Right.
Thank you very much. Very interesting committee meeting. All right. If everybody's okay, we're going to move directly into the Finance and Budget Committee. Regent West to carry on.
Okay. Our first action item we have is approval of faculty and staff personnel action.
Sure. Those are typical personnel and one-time payments that we bring to the board each quarter. There was nothing outstanding in the report. It was a little lengthy because it included all the 2% salary increases, so longer than normal, but nothing that anyone found unusual. But I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions? There will be none. I will entertain a motion to approve the faculty and staff personnel action.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes. All right, the next item that we have is the 2022-23 Statement of Revenues and Expenditures.
So no changes since I presented at the committee meeting in January. A good statement of revenues and expenses. We're tracking well against the budget and as compared to last year. So
I did not find anything unusual to report. Any questions? Discussion? Again, I will entertain a motion to accept for filing the statement of revenues and expenditures for a period ending December 31st, 2022 and 2021.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the motion passes. And then we have the next item on the agenda. Wasn't at the committee meeting. It's action item 3, which is acceptance of the auditor's reports and financial statements for WKYU-TV and radio.
Yeah, so I'll just make a few introductory comments, and then I'll turn it over to Jennifer Williams with Forbes, who conducted the audit. So again, really good audit for radio and television, and clean audit, unmodified opinion, and so great work to David and his staff. And then the NCAA agreed upon procedures. It's not technically an audit, and Jennifer will go through, but we work through things that we have to report to the NCAA, so no significant findings on that as well. So having said that, I will turn it over to Jennifer, who will run through this with the board.
Thank you, Susan, and thanks for the opportunity to be here. It's kind of hard to follow the beetle discussion, so I don't know about auditing and how exciting for here. But again, appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Like Susan mentioned, to present the results for the NCAA agreed upon procedures, as well as the TV and radio financial statement audits. As Susan mentioned, we did accomplish the audit plan in the timeline, so it was the first year with Forbes, so we had a great cooperation with the team, David and Emily, as well as Christy and Randy for the NCAA, so great cooperation from them. We did issue an unmodified or clean opinion, as Susan mentioned, on both of those financial statements. The agreed upon procedures is not an opinion, but again, we do note that information was presented fairly in relation to the statement of revenues and expenditures. On the TV and radio, we did have an emphasis of matter for the adoption of GASB 87, so that impacted the university as well as the station. There was some leases there. We did have a revision for the cash balance and investment, so when we performed those procedures, it was just a classification between cash and investment, so we had moved some items, thought that they were better presented as investments versus cash, but again, no material impact to the financial statements. As mentioned, we adopted 87, and then the information submitted to CPB and the NCAA was in the required time frame that it needed to be submitted. Just a couple of financial highlights here. First is the radio. So you'll see here, this is a snip from the management's discussion analysis. So the radio's net position increased approximately $434,000. One item impacting that was the PPP loan. That was received was formally forgiven during the year, so $144,000 was recognized as a gain in the financial statements. And then the grants that radio receives is approximately $399,000, so that is reflected in these financial statements here. Going on to TV, their net position increased $581,000. They as well had the PPP loan, approximately $171,000, so that was reflected as a gain in their financials as well. And then the grants from CPB was $768,000 during the year. So yeah, there you'll see just the current assets and the assets held. There is where the little bit of the revision was made in those line items there. So NCAA, switching gears there, they had we issued their agreed upon procedures report on January 12th. This year, the statement of revenues and expenses showed $35,142,710 on there, and there was no significant reportable matters issued in that report. We do issue a Board of Regents letter for the TV and radio financial statement. So here's just a summary of those key items that are included in that letter. Again, this just tells you that we follow these generally accepted accounting principles. We make sure the financial statements are prepared in accordance with those principles. Issue the unmodified opinion. The significant accounting policies, as I discussed, there was GASB 87, so we did have to look closely and work with the team there. There was no alternative accounting treatments that were noted in the financial statements. And then management's judgments and accounting estimates, we pay particular attention to those that are inherent in the financial statements, so no issues or concerns with those. We just look at the benefit pension plan and the assumptions that the actuaries use, and so we look at those reports closely. The financial statement disclosure, GASB 87 did have some additional disclosures with those leases, and so those were included on the financial statements. There was only two audit adjustments that we had. One, as I mentioned, was the revision for the cash and the investment, and then there was just a pension allocation that we updated one of the percentages, so a small impact there. And again, no other significant accounting policies to discuss other than GASB 87. And then the only other communication that we had was management representation letter that is signed by management when we prepare the financial statements, and that is attached to the Board of Regents letter. But other than that, there was no significant matter. So again, no, in any of matters, if there was material weaknesses or significant deficiencies, that would be in the letter. So again, kudos to the team. There was no significant issues in that regard to report either. So any questions?
This net position increase in both the radio and TV, is a significant portion of that loan forgiveness?
This year, yes. About that $170,000 and $144,000, that was primarily part of it. A lot of it's just the grants that are received as well, and then the expenditures that relate to that.
Well, they both look like they're on very firm ground as far as operating is concerned, which I think is commendable.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I would just like to, since we have Emily here, just if you could comment for us about, if we have a new auditor this year, your perspective on the process and challenges, successes, how it went.
Emily England is our, just for those of you that don't know, she's our Director of Finance and also our Compliance Officer related to all grants. So I'm happy that she could join us today. And giving that perspective, I think, would be beneficial.
I thought I was going to be able to sneak out with not having any questions at all. It was a seamless transition to Forvis. Jennifer and her team were fantastic to work with. I can't say enough good things about them. It was probably the first time since I've been there, which has been 10 years, with the radio and TV audits, that I felt like everything was looked at thoroughly and that they just did a fantastic job. It was just really good. They asked me lots of questions, and I love to answer questions, and it makes me, you know, go through with a fine-tooth comb as well, and I felt like they did that. And so it just, I think you got a really good packet this year for us. So thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you, Emily. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'll echo that briefly on our behalf. I think that this is the first time that I've been engaged directly with an auditor since I've been in this role, which is 9.5 years. And the thoroughness, we love detail, and we want people to dig down deep. And I think it helps with transparency. I think it helps when you're dealing with the amount of federal grant money that we deal with, and certainly being accountable to people that donate money to you as a department. So I appreciate Forbes' work. I think they're an outstanding firm. That being said, we didn't have any findings, so that's another positive.
Well, thank you. I very much appreciate that comment.
And I think that's not to disparage the previous people at all, and I think we heard that it's just good practice every so many years to switch.
It is good practice, and one that we've tried to engage in across the enterprise. A fresh set of eyes, a new set of perspectives, and a lack of familiarity creates questions that make the organization grow. and point out things that otherwise might just be passed over. So we've gone through this process of getting fresh eyes and fresh partners and doing RFPs in many areas. And one of the reasons you do that is because it just helps the institution get better. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right. Again, congratulations to all for a really good report and a thorough audit. And if there are no further questions, I'll entertain a motion to accept the auditor's report and financial statements for WKYU-TV and radio.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Please note an abstention for me. Thanks.
All right, and the motion passes. Are you going to stay to discuss the athletic report as well?
Oh, yeah.
NCAA compliance report.
Oh, yes. So on the NCAA, so that is an agreed-upon procedures report, and so we do look through the statement of revenues and expenditures, look at those lines. We do follow the NCAA guidelines that are reported, and so there was an agreed-upon procedures report issued, and there was no significant reportable matters to report to you today as well.
Anybody have any comments or questions? Being none, I'll entertain a motion to accept the independent accountant's report on applying agreed upon procedures for NCAA compliance.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the motion passes. Chair Bell, I think that completes the finance and budget.
Thank you very much. Everybody good? Press on. The next committee is Student Affairs and Regent Thomas.